Welcome to the Central Assembly Podcast. You're about to hear another inspirational message from Dr. Jim Bradford. It's our prayer that this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
I'd like to speak on this Sunday morning about what I consider one of the great traits of biblical manhood, and that's courage. I like to talk about profiles and courage. Now, if you're a lady here, you need courage as well, so there's something for all of us here. And I believe you also would be interested in the men in your life, being men who have the courage to live with integrity, have the courage not to cave into the culture, have the courage to be what God's called them to be. We all need men and women of God like that. I'm very honored to have two longtime dear friends of mine, Mark and Janie Doreen. They're sitting down here. And Mark will be your preacher next Sunday. Sandy and I are leaving for Morocco this afternoon to do a week of missions over there. But Mark is a longtime friend, a great leader, great communicator, and he's going to be preaching for me next week. He was the one who followed me when I left the university church that grew out of my engineering days at the University of Minnesota. And he was one of our leaders in the congregation and one of the guys that the guy that followed me there. And so he knows me better than most of you know me. Don't ask him any questions, but he's going to share the word of the Lord with you next Sunday morning. It's going to be a powerful, wonderful time. And thank you for your prayer for Sandy and I as we head out this afternoon for Morocco. I grew up on an old version of the Bible because I went to church when I was a little kid. And it was a King James Version. It was written 400 years ago. And there's a phrase in the middle of 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 13 that has always caught my attention. It doesn't make sense anymore because the English language has changed. That's why we don't use the King James in most of our Sunday preaching. We use the New International Version here largely. But 1 Corinthians 16, 13 has this amazing little phrase in the King James Version that goes like this: quit you like men. Quit you like men. The problem is the definition of the word quit has changed. The word quit is stop, give up, hang it up. And just for the record, what Paul is not saying here is be a man and give up. That's not what he's saying. That's what the English says to us now. But 400 years ago, that word quit is somewhat related to our word acquit, A-C-Q-I-T, Q-U-I-T, acquit, or outfit yourself like a man. The New King James Version simply translates that today as be brave, or the New International Version, have courage. Right in the middle of that amazing verse, 1 Corinthians 16, verse 13, is that little phrase. I like quit you like men. Sometimes I'll say, over the years, I just stuck in my memory. I'll just say, quit you like a man, Bradford. And it means don't give up. It means be brave, be courageous. Our culture is redefining manhood. It's wimping manhood out. But not in the stereotypic kind of ways. Because I think biblical manhood is not how many deer you've shot. It's not how many fish you've caught. It's not how many winning teams you've been on. It's not how much you can bench press. It's not how boisterous and dominant your personality is. I believe at the heart of biblical manhood, so I love that verse, quit you like men, be brave. The ultimate, I think, great, beside loving and surrendering your life to Jesus and following him as your king, the greatest profile of a man, as God designed men to be, is that we're men of courage. That we do acquit ourselves like men. That we do handle ourselves like men, which what means one thing, that you're a man who is brave. I dislike all the advertisings on TV, that are especially the dads. They're always the boneheads, right? They're always the guys who don't get it, and the wife's always smart, and I know that is true in my marriage, but I resent it always being portrayed like that on TV and on the internet. And there's a demasculating of men happening in our culture. There's a sense that unless you're feminine in somehow, then you're not a good man. But there is a kind of biblical manhood that God wants to raise up. God wants men of courage, and he wants women of courage too. But ladies, let me say, you can't be in the Church of Jesus Christ, and your family can't be all it can be if the men of God are lacking courage. This is part of it. It's not either or, it's both and. It's not that one's more important than the other. But I want to talk to you men on this Father's Day. We need to be men of courage. And we're going to go to 2 Samuel chapter 23 and see some profiles in courage. I rarely ever preach on this on a Sunday morning. I have sometimes with my men prayer partners talked about David's mighty men. But I thought this would be a good day to talk about David's mighty men. We're going to read through some of their stories. This will be like watching a superhero movie. I don't know if you follow like the Marvel superheroes, but this is going to be like, except they don't have supernatural powers other than God was with them and did supernatural things through them. And it's fascinating. I always smile when I read, and I'm always encouraged, and I go, I want to be like that when I read. But above all, these are profiles in courage. And as we go to 2 Samuel chapter 23, we first of all see that courage is not backing down or giving up. That's not what courage is. Courage is doing the opposite. Like, for instance, in verse 8 of 2 Samuel 23, these are the names of David's mighty warriors: Josheb-Bashabeh, a Tachmonite, was chief of the three. He raised his spear against, get this, 800 men. These would be enemy soldiers. He raised his spear against 800 men whom he killed, not over a lifetime, but he killed in one encounter. Now, I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, if I was Josheb, at about 450 guys, I would think, probably time to quit. Except, small problem, there's 350 more out there. And he doesn't give up. He doesn't back down until he's defeated the enemy. I know some of you as godly dads in this congregation, and I know every demon in hell is after your kids and your grandkids, but I see you fighting for them in the spirit. I see you praying for them. I see you loving them. I see you mentoring them and encouraging them, and you are not backing down, and you are not giving up until the last of the enemy is defeated that's trying to destroy our children. That's courage. That's not giving up or backing down. It was 7 years ago. In fact, it was July 26th, 2012, when the European economy was in crisis and the whole structure of the European currency, which we call the euro, was about to crumble. It was on that morning of July 26th, the markets and the euro were plunging in value. And everybody had their eye on one person, and that was the president of the European Central Bank, who was going to be making a comment and holding a press conference that afternoon. All eyes were upon him. What he said would be the pivot point, whether Europe would go into further economic collapse or whether it would turn around. You can imagine the tension around that particular news conference. And he comes up behind the podium, and somebody raises their hand and said, "Sir, what are you going to do to stabilize the European currency?" And the whole world pivoted around the next three words. All he said was, "Whatever it takes." And immediately the financial markets turned around, and at least the short-term crisis was averted. And that's the spirit of courage. We're not backing down. We're not giving up. Whatever it takes, we're hanging in the battle. We're not giving up. We're not giving up on God. We're not giving up on ourselves. We're not giving up on our church. We're not giving up on our bosses. We're not giving up on our employees. Whatever it takes, we're not giving up. Now, if you're doing something that's clearly not working, something that's just not wise in the first place, you should quit that. But when it comes to the important things in life, whatever it takes. I love those three words. The next verse, next to him was, so next to the guy who killed 800 guys in one encounter, next to him was Eleazar, the son of Dodai, the Ahohite. As one of the three mighty warriors, he was with David when they taunted the Philistines. The Philistines are sort of our favorite bad guys in the Old Testament. And they were with David when they taunted the Philistines, gather at Pos-Damon for battle. Then, at the end of that verse, it says, but then the Israelites retreated. The Israelites pulled back. They taunted the enemy. The enemy got a little too fierce, and so the Israelite army pulled back, except for one guy. Then the Israelites retreated, but Eleazar stood his ground, and he struck down the Philistines till his hand grew tired and froze to the sword. And the Lord brought a great victory that day. Now, my father-in-law, Sandy's dad, my wife's dad, he died years ago in his mid-90s, but in his generation, he was considered, he was a great orator. He preached all over the world. Many people would refer to him as the best preacher they ever heard preach. And he was an amazing man of God. But one of his most popular sermons was his hand, this is King James again, his hand clave to the sword. It said the whole army of God retreated, but Eleazar would not give up the ground. And he fought until he got so tired that his hand froze to the sword. It's not because it was below 32 degrees outside. It was because his muscles cramped up until he couldn't even let go of that sword because he was holding on to it so tightly. And he was determined not to give up ground for the purposes of God. And he fought until his hand literally froze to the sword. Where are the men of God who are holding on while it seems like the whole culture is retreating on us? Where we no longer believe in truth. Like Ravi Zacharias said, as far as the culture is concerned, certainty is our greatest sin as the church. How arrogant, how demeaning of others to think that you have found the truth. That certainty has become our greatest sin in the eyes of our culture. And so everybody around us is compromising. We don't hold to moral values like we did one time. We can't handle being made fun of at work because we love Jesus. And so what do? Even some of our friends in the church, they're retreating, they're compromising, the enemy's attacking, and we're just giving up, and we just are feeling overwhelmed. And God says, where are the Eleazars? They're going to stand, and they're going to fight till their hand freezes to the sword if necessary, but they are not giving up what belongs to the truth of God for the sake of children or wanting to commit suicide and are getting involved in every addiction for the sake of a culture that is dismantling all over the place and disintegrating. Who is going to be the man or woman of God and say, I'm not going to retreat like everybody else. I believe some things are true. I believe Jesus is the King. I believe His way is the right way to live. I believe there is right and there is wrong. And I'm going to go to my grave fighting for what's right for the sake of my family, my church, my city, my culture. So courage is not backing down or giving up. Secondly, as we continue to read these rather interesting superhero stories, we find that courage is taking the initiative for the honor of your king. Now, if you're a follower, and all of us are followers in some roles in our lives, you follow the initiative that others take. That's what makes them the leader. However, courage takes you past just always waiting for somebody else to do it for you or instead of you or first. Courage says, I'm going to take the initiative, even if nobody else is. I'm going to take the initiative, and I'm going to do it for the honor of my king. So look now in verse 13. During the harvest time, three of the 30 chief warriors came down to David at the cave of Adullam, while a band of Philistines, there they are again, while a band of Philistines was encamped at the Valley of Rephaim, next verse, or verse 15. And David, while this scenario, this standoff is taking place, David longed for water and said, "Oh, that someone would get me a drink of water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem." Now, this is a nostalgic moment for David. Of course, they're at this impasse. He and his soldiers are thirsty. And he just has this moment where he happens to say out loud, "Oh, I'd give anything." And he grew up in Bethlehem. He said, I'd do anything to have a drink of water out of that well in Bethlehem. There's no water like that well in Bethlehem that I used to feed my sheep from and that I used to drink from. Oh, that I could just drink from the well back home. Well, 27 of the main 30 mighty men didn't do anything about that, but three of them did. They took initiative. It's not even like David ordered them to do this. He was just, he just was sort of sighing and saying, "Oh, I'd give anything for just a drink of water from that well back home." And so three guys, without being asked, take the initiative to satisfy their king's desire. Is that your heart for King Jesus? To satisfy his desire. So David longed for water. "Oh, that someone would get me a drink from the well near the gate of Bethlehem." Verse 16. So the three mighty warriors broke through the Philistine lines. They broke through the enemy line. It was a special ops operation, insertion. And they went behind the Philistine lines and they found that well and drew water from it. That well, it was right near the gate of Bethlehem that David would have grown up around since the time he was born. And they carried that water back to David. They took the initiative for the honor of their king. It took immense courage. They risked their lives to do this. They didn't have to do this. The king wasn't asking them to do this. But they knew that this was the longing of their king, and out of loyalty to him, they were willing not to wait around for an assignment, but to do what it took to honor their king. David was so moved by this that he actually refuses to drink the water as a tribute to the courage of these men who risked their lives to get it. My dad was that kind of person. I don't talk a lot about my father. I realize father issues are very complicated for many people. And to be honest, over the years as a pastor, when I've talked about my father, because he was a great guy and we had a great relationship, people will say to me, you know, when you talk about your dad, it makes me feel like you don't relate to me at all as your pastor, as a pastor and things. So I'm always a little careful because my dad truly was a spectacular man. And I know this room's full of guys who are being spectacular dads to their kids as well, even though it's a very complicated issue for others of us. But for me, my dad was a great guy. And I learned, so there's a picture of him. You can cut off on the top. You can sort of tell where the hairline comes from. And my dad was the most active volunteer, and he was, to me, the consummate example of somebody who didn't wait to be asked. He just took the initiative because he loved Jesus so much. My dad was filled with the Holy Spirit a couple of years before I was born, right about the time he was married. I was the first child. And growing up, he was in every church we went to, whatever city, his company moved us around some, from city to city every few years. And so we'd find an Assemblies of God church in the town we were going. We'd attend it and never go anywhere else. And he would become the most active volunteer. I've literally seen pastors cry, weep, when Dad was transferred with his company to another city. And Dad was always the kind of guy, because he loved the Lord so much, he was never paid for any of this. It was all as a volunteer. He became an unbelievable volunteer. He died 15 years ago this summer, very suddenly and unexpectedly, when he was at work. He owned his own business, a small business in Winnipeg, Manitoba, where I was born, and maybe 30 employees. But he led several of those employees to the Lord. He treated them right. He was truly a godly boss. He let his faith infiltrate every part of his life. But he always wanted to own his own company eventually, which he did those last few years, because he wanted to be able to volunteer his time to serve in the Lord and not have to account for his time to another boss. So he thought, I'll just own my own company. That's the way I'll get around that. Then I only have to answer to Jesus for how I spend my time. And so he became, when he died at work in his office. He suddenly just crumpled and died just like that. We weren't expecting it at all. And he was 75 years old. He was directing the men's ministry for the entire province of Manitoba in the Canadian Assemblies of God. He was teaching a new believers class at our church. He had led singles ministries at our church. He'd been on the church board. I've seen him lead direct choirs like Pastor Tom did this morning. I've seen him lead worship in his younger years. Just whatever needed doing, he was up there volunteering. I mean, some jobs like being on a board, you need to be asked, but most things he didn't even ask. He'd see a need and he'd just go. He took initiative because he loved Jesus so much. And he'd be gone sometimes a lot, but he just loved the church. Here are the things I learned about taking initiative, about serving Jesus from my father. Number one, you don't have to be a pastor to be a minister. I learned this from him. In fact, he loved volunteering in the church so much, people would say, I feel like, you know, you missed your calling. God probably called you to be a pastor. And he said, no, I deeply believe God never called me to pastor. He called me to be a businessman, my dad would say, and to be a light in the business world. But just because you love serving God doesn't mean you have to be a pastor, right? I mean, can I hear an amen in the house? I mean, I hope I'm not the only one as a pastor that all the pressure's on to do all the ministry. I mean, and I learned this from my dad. He didn't let the fact, well, I'm not a pastor, be an excuse for him not taking the initiative to honor Jesus. Secondly, he taught me by his example that volunteer ministry is worth sacrificing for. Sometimes he'd be gone two evenings a week or three working at the church. Sometimes he'd drag me along with him. But I knew that he was tired sometimes. And I'd watch him take phone calls at 10 o'clock at night from people who just needed somebody who cared about them. And instead of calling the pastor, they called my dad. And he was always there for him. And that's inconvenient. And nobody likes phone calls at 10 o'clock at night. But I'd watch him take those calls because he loved people. And he just believed volunteer ministry, honoring the king, is worth sacrificing. That was those three guys. They heard a longing that their king had, and they risked their lives to go behind enemy lines to satisfy that longing. And that's exactly how my dad did. Well, he took the initiative, and he knew it's worth the risk. It's worth the tiredness. It's worth the hard work. It's worth all the people interactions to be able to honor my king. Volunteer ministry is worth sacrificing for. And he also believed by example that you stay faithful even if the place isn't perfect. Nothing's ever perfect. There's one season when we were still in Canada where my dad got really hurt by a pastor. But he never stopped giving to the church and he never stopped volunteering. My dad came up with an out-of-box strategy for an area of ministry he was involved in. And the pastor took his motives wrong and really hurt him. I hate when that happens. I know I've hurt people, even with the best of intentions. Sometimes even doing right hurts people, and you don't want it to happen, but it's just, you know, we all get hurt. You know my line. If you haven't got hurt in church, where have you been? Well, my dad got hurt in church. Got hurt by a pastor very personally. But he taught me by example, you stay in the battle. Just because your feelings get hurt, you stay faithful even if the place isn't perfect. And then he taught me people are more important than programs. People are more important than programs. And he led programs, but it was always people that he loved. He was always at the altar praying with people like we saw this morning. He was always reaching out to people. Every time he was at church on a Sunday morning, I mean, we never left church early after service was over, not with Dad. Because if he saw a new person anywhere, you know, nobody assigned him this, and this wasn't a program in the church. But if there was somebody he didn't know at church, even larger churches like this that we attended, he was there for them. And he wasn't married to programs. My dad was always willing to flex, even if it's not the way we always did it before. As long as people were being ministered to, he was saying, hey, let's try it. He was in Enthusiasm was the word people often associate with my father. And I bring his example on this Father's Day this morning to say that this is what courage looks like. Courage isn't waiting around for somebody to pamper you and make it easy for you and make sure you never get your feelings hurt and make sure it's not too tough and you don't have to sacrifice too much. Listen, in honor of his king, my dad was passionately in love with Jesus. I would stand in worship services with him sometimes. I'm yay high. And I look up and the congregation is worshiping the Lord. And my dad's there with his hands in the air and tears are streaming down his face. Because he so loved Jesus. He so loved the presence of God. He so hungered for God. And that's why he never was passive. He always was taking the initiative. He always had the courage to try something new, to do something that cost yourself your something, even if you got hurt, and even if it's different than the way we used to do it. He was up there because in honor of his king, he decided, I'm not going to wait for other people. I'm going to be the one to take the initiative. I love that. That's what courage to me looks like. Courage is not backing down or giving up. Courage is taking the initiative in honor of your king. And lastly, courage is facing your fears and confronting your limitations. Courage is facing your fears and confronting your limitations. So the story continues of these great men. Verse 20 now of 2 Samuel 23. Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, a valiant fighter from Kabzeel, performed great exploits. So now we're on to Benaiah. He struck down Moab's two mightiest warriors. Moab was across the river, across the Jordan River, the other side, especially of the Dead Sea, from where Judah would have been and David would have been. And they were also, at times, mortal enemies of the Israelites. These guys were always fighting. And two of Moab's mightiest warriors. He took down their two top-level elite forces soldiers. And he did it all by himself. And he performed great exploits. He struck down Moab's two mightiest warriors. And there in the end of verse 20, he also went down into a pit on a snowy day and killed a lion. Now, what on earth would you do that for? Well, it must have been his day off. And it must have been boring. And he thrived on facing his fears and taking on things that you normally shouldn't take on, especially a lion in a pit. That would have given the lion the distinct advantage. Plus, his eyesight would have been 5 times more precise than a human's eyesight. And down in that pit, and it wasn't the lion was chasing Benaiah, the lion was in a pit. This was Benaiah chasing a lion on advantaged turf for the lion. And on top of it, there's snow in the ground. So that lion with his big paws would have had much more secure footing than Benaiah's little human feet. Everything was working against him, and it doesn't even say he had a weapon. He might have, but plus killing the top two soldiers in the Moabite Empire, he goes down and goes after a lion because it's in a pit on a snowy day. And why not? Because this is what makes you thrive. Mark Batterson is a casual friend of mine, and he's preached from this pulpit, this platform before, and written many books. He wrote a whole book simply entitled, In a Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day. Guess what that book's about? He writes in that book these words, but Benaiah did what lion chasers do. He defied the odds. He didn't focus on his disadvantages. He didn't make excuses. He didn't try to avoid situations where the odds were against him. He didn't try to avoid those situations because lion chasers know that God is bigger and more powerful than any problem they face in the world. They thrive in the toughest circumstances because they know that impossible odds set the stage for amazing miracles. That is how God reveals his glory. That is how he blesses you in ways you never could imagine. Because lion chasers run towards the roar, not away from it. Lion chasers face the odds against them. They face their limitations, and they declare, by God's grace and strength, I'm not letting some limitation intimidate me. I'm going all the way. Because Jesus said, all things are possible with God. And Paul said, no, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. That's why courage, men of God who have courage, that's why they don't back down or give up. That's why they take the initiative in honor of their king rather than waiting around for somebody else to do it first. And that's why they face their fears and confront their limitations and say, I am determined to see the triumph of God in my life. And so I don't run from limitations. I don't run from the things that intimidate me or make me scared. I'm still taking risks. I tell you, I'm 66 years old, and I must say, I'm trying to be like my dad, who even at 75 was trying things he never tried before. He was still taking risks. He was still stepping out where he knew he could fail, but he knew who he was serving. He knew that in him, all things were possible. And he was never famous. He never had positions officially in the church. He never had titles, but he had a passion for his king. And he said, I'm not letting anything stop me. All things are possible. That's what men of courage are made of. They face their fears. They confront their limitations. And they believe that in all things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. Do you believe that? Do you believe that? I'll tell you, your boss this week isn't your limitation. Because you serve the God who dwarfs every limitation. And what you can't control, he can control. I'll tell you, your kids who walked away from the Lord, a few of you, or your grandkids, for a number of you, I want to tell you, there's no demon in hell strong enough for the power of God. And the story's not over. Don't stop loving them. Don't stop encouraging them. Don't let the, some days I feel outshouted by the media. I feel outmuscled by a godless culture. But I want to tell you, with God, all things are possible in people's lives. Don't give up. Don't back down. Don't live safely. Don't let your fears make your decisions for you. Don't be reckless and stupid, but don't let your limitations define you, because you serve a God through whom all things are possible. And we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. That's where we as men of God can stand in strength. So I'd like to invite you to stand.